Hello, friends, and I'm back. It's been a while. It's already the 10th of October, and my last recording along this line was on the 20th of September. There have been so many things intervening, and I'm sorry that I've had to delay so long returning to this work. In any case, we are on program 34, apparently. The communications team will straighten me out if I'm incorrect here. Yes, and today will be the beginning, will be the 10th of October. And I'll try to stay a little more steady on this. If I possibly can, I'd like to make a little segue, at least go into the Tibetan who said that before the mystic can take initiation, we've been looking at the mystic and then soon to be looking at the occult approaches to spirituality and to, in general, to the elevation of the human being. DK is talking quite a bit about the fire connected with the mystic, and let's remember that Neptune is the home of the solar flames, Neptune being the major mystical planet, and I would say Uranus being the major planet of occultism. So before he can take initiation, he has to do three things. First, by meditation, to bring his whole nature under rule and to learn to build the forms and hence to learn their value. And I've said here that there's a need then for the form-building rays, the seventh, the fifth, the first, the outer form, at least, and the inner forms of meditation. The mystic, so often on the sixth ray, is the hater of the forms. That's one of the names, the hater of form, given to us in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. Secondly, to develop appreciation of the concrete, well, again, the fifth and seventh rays are needed, and to learn clearly the place within the scheme of things, of the various sheaths through which the life he so much loves has to manifest. The mystic is the lover of the more essential factor, the life factor, and not so much the, well, rarely the lover of the form through which the life expresses itself. So, but the instruments of expression are needed if the divine plan is to manifest. So at first, I'm saying here that the mystic is unbalanced. Then DK goes on and says he has to work at his mental body and bring it to the storehouse, bring it to the storehouse of facts before he can proceed much further, much further. Well, that's it. And the mystics tend to emphasize the old occult adage, the mind is the slayer of the real. But of course, there's also the mind used as the revealer of the real. And this is true as well. So a balance is required. And now we can see how Master DK's teaching is such a kind of antidote to the mystical tendency, because Master DK does demand that we use the mind and eventually the occult mind to understand the world around us and within us. So we can be grateful that we are subject to this particular kind of teaching that's being offered. Many of us have been mystics. You know, if I can insert a little piece of personal information, I know I have been, and on the sixth ray very strongly. And when I take my own PIP test as objectively as I can, the seventh ray and the fifth ray in the outer sense are the lowest rays, and these are the very rays which correct the mystical tendency. So maybe the seventh ray being the least of all. So maybe when you take the PIP and you begin to notice the pattern, it can tell you something about your leaning, whether towards the occult path or whether you are still treading the mystical path. So many of our students still are, but to work with Master DK is a real corrective. Okay, so AABM, the Tibetan, have said one must have a well-stocked mind. The third point before the mystic can really make further progress is to learn through the intelligent study of the microcosm. That's the man himself. His little spirit matter system, the dual value of the macrocosm. And here we have the possibility of analogizing our way from the microcosm to the macrocosm. And the dual value, well, what shall that really be? I would say that it is the system in which we live and move and have our being. So it has a microcosmic influence. At the same time, we live on a planet, which we can consider the macrocosm, and within a solar system, a still greater macrocosm, which has its own destiny. And we are part of that destiny and must learn how to enhance it. This is often the issue that I've been bringing up. If you are a citizen, a spiritual citizen of your country, how do you advance the soul nature of your country through your own microcosmic soul nature? How do you advance the soul of humanity? How do you contribute to the welfare of your own planet and eventually of the solar system? We need focused individual attention, yes. And we need also to think of ourselves as participating in a much larger system in which we live and move and have our being, and we must think about how to advance the objectives of that system through our own soul capabilities. So the mystic understands very well the fire that burns. If we get Mars and Neptune together, there is a fiery aspect to Neptune, the home of the solar flames. And they both burn. They try to burn away everything that masks or in some way inhibits the full expression of the life aspect. And they have to not only know the fire that burns, but to understand and work through the fire that builds, that fuses, and that develops form, building, fusing, developing. So that takes us with our segue to page 151. All of this written down about 100 years ago, a little more. And now we talk about the occult form. The form as it is used by the meditator, who is not the mystic, but more of the occultist or the becoming occultist. I think when we study with DK, we are that, the becoming occultist. At the same time, we do not drop the benefits that have accrued to us during the mystical period when we were more under Neptune. He says here, we studied 2 days ago the method whereby the mystic attains union and outlined very briefly the path whereby he attempts to reach his goal. In brevity, there is a lot of wisdom allowing us to continue to develop the seed that has been planted, and we have a responsibility in that respect. He cannot hand feed us every detail. As Master Moria says, to give all is to put on chains. Today we will outline as briefly the course taken by the occultist and his type of meditation, contrasting it with that of the mystic, and pointing out later how the two have to merge and their individual elements be fused into one. I think we have seen a diagram of the planetary schemes, which backs up here what Master DK has said. I wonder if I can find that for us. Let's see. Let's try this one. And yeah, there it is. And this is a picture of the major planetary schemes within our solar system, or at least a fair number of them. Maybe one might be missing. We have Vulcan. We have Venus. We have Mercury. Do we have Mars? Yes, Mars. We have the Earth scheme. We have the Jupiter scheme. And then would come Saturn and the, well, Saturn is central here. And this is a greater type of Saturn, this circle, Saturn. And we have, following Saturn, Uranus, and then Neptune. We don't seem to have a Pluto scheme. Of course, this particular map was drawn before 1925. And we can see that it's not included among the dense physical planets, though later, when it was discovered somewhere, I think around 1930, it became an object of study in esoteric astrology. But what we learn is that the masters are not allowed to reveal prematurely certain information, and they wait for humanity to discover it, and then they can confirm it. So Pluto appears to be left out, but it is it's a non-sacred but an esoteric planet. And of course, there's been an attempt to demote Pluto to a kind of a planetoid status with other planets in that particular group at the what we normally consider the far ends of the solar system. It's not really the far ends. There apparently is quite a bit going on in a much larger radius than the one that ends with Pluto and its associated planets. Anyway, Pluto is not considered here, probably for a variety of reasons. Now, going back with the Zoom program, you know, there's always the possibility, more than with GoToMeeting, of discussing one subject and yet having a screen that is showing another, unless one is quite alert. So anyway, the type of meditation followed by the occultist or the student of occultism, that's what we are looking for now. The line of form, you know, the 1-3-5-7 line, pretty much, hard line rays, is for the occultist the line of least resistance. And incidentally, I might here interpolate a thought. Well, I think I'm just going to highlight that part of it. And maybe I'll use the red, which is the first ray color primarily, having some connection, of course, also with Mars and the sixth ray. But at least that is found at the top of the line of form. So he's going to interpolate a thought. The fact being admitted, we may therefore look with some certainty at this time for a rapid development of occult knowledge and for the appearance of some true occultists. Okay, well, under the seventh ray, I believe this will happen. And the coming in of the seventh ray souls is an imminent process. Maybe, it's certainly bound to increase. By the coming in of the seventh ray, the ray of form, okay, and of ritual, or the ray in which the mantram, the highest and the lowest meet, is applicable. The ray of form and ritual, the finding of the occult path, and the assimilation of occult knowledge, is powerfully facilitated. So, you know, that is a blessing. And of course, unless there is sufficient heart energy, a possible curse as well. We're told that the white magicians, or the students inclined towards white magic, will have to battle with the strictly mental magicians during at least part of the Aquarian age. And magic can be used then in ways that do not promote right human relations, right inter-kingdom relations, right relations in general. The occultist is at first occupied more, notice that word at first, because we always have to achieve a balance. The occultist is at first occupied more with the form through which the deity manifests than with the deity himself. And it is here that the fundamental difference between the two types is at first apparent. The occultist is occupied with the garment. Oh, that's Garden of Gethsemane. That's not what I want. I want the garment of God, discussed in the law of repulse under the fifth ray. I thought I had the garment of God down pretty well, but maybe not. You know, I think what I'll do is G-A-R-G. That's it. Okay, so I'll cancel that. The garment of God. And we're supposed to search for the one behind the garment. We're told in no uncertain terms. And that one behind the garment is the wearer of the garment, the true being, the life, to which the mystic has perhaps more immediate access. Eventually, these things start to balance out, and the true occultist must be the mystic as well. And the true mystic will add occult knowledge and make his approach to divinity more effective. Okay. So I'm just trying to Okay. And this should be finish and there we go. The mystic eliminates or endeavors to transcend mind in his process of finding the self. The occultist, through his intelligent interest in the forms which veil the self, the essential being, the self, and by the employment of the principle of mind on both its levels, arrives at the same point. He can transcend the very mind that he uses. What did Ramakrishna say? Something like, he was a great mystic, of course. He said, the mind is like a thorn. So use that thorn to remove another thorn and throw them both away. So we use the mind to remove the hold which the mind has over us. We think our way through into a state where the usual use of the mind is no longer necessary. Of course, if we use the transcendental mind of the Buddhic plane, much more is revealed. I love that term, transcendental mind. It tells us something about Buddhic use of mercury. Mercury is found in many expressions, all the way from the concrete to the very abstract. Maybe we could even call it nirvanic mind of the atmic plane. So anyway, the mystic eliminates or endeavors to transcend mind. And I want to say, let's see here. As usually used, oh goodness, wrong, as usually used in his process of finding the self. We all must find the self. We all must find the essence underlying what our perceptions reveal to us. The occultist, through his intelligent interest in the forms which veil the self, the study of the garment of God, and by the employment of the principle of mind on both its levels, assuming, assuming concrete mind and abstract mind, arrives at the same point. In other words, that point, what is that point? That point is the finding of the self. He recognizes the sheaths that veil. He applies himself to the study of the laws that govern the manifested solar system. He concentrates on the objective, and in his earlier years may at times overlook the value of the subjective. Now note, in his earlier years, before experience shows to the budding occultist the necessity of finding the subjective life behind the form that he studies. He arrives eventually at the central life by the elimination, through conscious knowledge and control, of sheath after sheath. So the ring pass not, or the rings pass not, are negated. The RPNs are negated through this concentrated study. He meditates upon form until form is lost sight of, and the creator of the form becomes all in all. This is very beautifully stated, and I think we can understand the different approaches, and we can maybe see with which approach we are most aligned. And sometimes there is a balance, or at least a balance is what we have to try to achieve. And maybe, you know, as usual, Libra will be the sign under which we can achieve that balance. So sheath after sheath is penetrated, and he understands the laws of that penetration and the lifting of the sheaths to reveal yet another ring pass knot, which is a kind of prison, and the laws which confine to that greater ring pass knot have to be studied and utilized, and then that ring pass knot is penetrated. Well, you know, you can assess in your own life where you are with the penetration through the confining sheaths. One of the major penetrations is on the mental plane, where we manage to move past personality confinement into the world of the higher mind, where the angel of the presence may be found. And then there will be other sheaths. The causal body ends up being a kind of sheath. We have to enter the spiritual triad, especially the cosmic etheric part of the spiritual triad, meaning the Buddhic and the Atmic planes. We're busy doing this all the time as we try to understand how to become more subtly sensitive to this possibility of higher spiritual impression. Well, anyway, we do want to arrive at the central life, and in this little kind of course of study that I'm calling Identify as Being, we are making our attempt to arrive at the central life. It is somewhat a mystical approach, I think. It's not so much the study of the laws by which the sheaths are removed as the detection of and identification as the principle of life, the essence, the being. Okay, so we understand that in a way we're working from the outside in when we use the occult method. And maybe we've reached that point in our development, as so many of us are no longer in our earlier years, where the value of the subjective is increasingly understood. He arrives eventually at the central life by the elimination through conscious knowledge and control of sheath after sheath. And here, of course, we would gradually be becoming the white magician. And that's important in the coming age, because a balancing must take place. The seventh ray and the fifth ray will become very powerful. The fifth ray coming through Aquarius, transmitted through Aquarius, the seventh ray coming through Aquarius in a planetary sense, through Uranus, and to an extent through Jupiter, interestingly, and also accompanying the age of Aquarius in its own seventh ray cycle. So eventually the form, even for the occultist, must be lost sight of, and the creator of the form becomes all in all. And when a term like all in all is used, it's not simply a colloquial term, it really has an occult message, because all, the essential all, is indeed in all. Excuse me. Now, here are some of the things which the occultist, like the mystic, must do. And I think I'll go back up here for just a moment and see how I did this. Okay, let me just bring this down. We're being given the instructions. He has to learn the law and to apply that law to, looks like, himself. Okay. Let's see if I can Rigid self-discipline is his method, and necessarily so, for the dangers threatening the occultist are not those of the mystic. And here we're reminded of all of the strictures which accompany the rules of magic. We're reminded that the Tibetan is withholding certain aspects related to these rules. Certain practices, certain mantrams are withheld because it's too dangerous to give them out just yet. But he tells us that if we study carefully, when he is ready to give these particulars, we will be ahead in our ability to assimilate them because of the theoretical studies that we have pursued. Rigid self-discipline is his method, and necessarily so, for the dangers threatening the occultists are not those which threaten the mystic. Okay. Now, pride, selfishness, and the wielding of the law from curiosity or desire for power have to be burnt out of him before the secrets of the path can be entrusted in his care, to his care. We have seen many proud would-be magicians. One of the leaders in that seventh ray field, you know who that is, Aleister Crowley, was a knowledgeable man, but he certainly demonstrated a number of these undesirable traits and really had no interest in seeing these traits burnt out of him. And I think, in my opinion, misled many onto the path of egotistical magic. So selflessness is a really important aspect to cultivate. And actually what I'm going to do, I'm going to say, I think, secondly, and thirdly. Okay. These are not the Tibetan words, but just to help orient, you know. There we go. Okay. Now, how do we burn this out? Well, how is humility achieved? And always the heart and service have to be brought to bear. One becomes the white magician representing the soul, which is the loving soul, the soul which has group consciousness. And let's just say, burnt out of him, he treads successfully the burning ground. That becomes a very important part of his training. Now, what is the second factor that the occultist must practice or do? Three. Okay, the second factor, what is it? In meditation, he has, through the form built, to concentrate upon the indwelling life. Through the form built, he has to concentrate upon the indwelling life. So I wonder if we can fathom what that means. There are certain meditative forms help us to do this. He has to seek the inner burning fire that irradiates all forms that shelter the divine life. So forms really are a kind of protection, we might say. Forms. Type of shelter or protection for the inner divine life. We cannot release the fullness of that inner fiery nature without a disciplined, appropriate, balanced method. So the form of the occultist is brought to bear, and it will open the door to the indwelling life. Okay. And thirdly, what must the occultist do? Through the scientific study of the macrocosm, the kingdom of God without, he has to reach a point where he locates that kingdom likewise within. It's easy, I think, in the beginning of our spiritual aspiration, in the early days of evolution, to think of God as transcendent, but to think of God as immanent, this is another matter. And I wonder, even though we may think of God immanent, do we experience God immanent? Do we experience, without pride, hubris, any inflation, but simply through identification, the I am God realization, the immanence of God, God within. Maybe it begins as kind of an understanding of a higher power within, the pairs of opposites within us. Maybe it begins that way. Something higher is within us, and that something higher is our truer self, and it's also a representative of that transcendent deity that we are accustomed to praising, worshiping, imploring, invoking, etc. So we have three things that the occultist must do, just as there were three things the mystic had to do, and we began this program by mentioning those. The first has to do with applying the law to himself through rigid self-discipline. The second, through the form built to concentrate upon the indwelling life. Now, that may seem a contradiction. Can we reach the life by using the form? DK says that we can, and certain, I suppose, mantric forms help us reach that indwelling life rather than becoming our consciousness becoming strictly fixated on the form. He has to, thirdly, locate the kingdom of God within. And this is locating, or detecting, or identifying with or as God immanent. There's the imminent, which is about to happen. It's coming up immediately, and immanent, which means indwelling. Okay, here, therefore, is the merging point of the mystic and the occultist. Here their paths become one. I spoke earlier in this letter of the interest to the clairvoyant in noting the difference in the forms built by the mystic and the occultist in meditation. And he says, I might touch on some of the differences for your interest, though until such vision as yours, my point may be but words to you. Well, he certainly does repeat the idea that words are limitations and can be quite empty ciphers until the inner skill, the inner sensitivity is there, has developed. Okay, so the coming together of the two, this is what we are talking about, the two paths. The two paths become one. And when we are masters of the wisdom or lords of compassion, there may be kind of a leaning in one direction or the other, but both are capable of occultism, both are capable of identification as the life, and that would be mysticism. We have Master Serapis and Master Jesus, respectively, on the fourth and sixth rays, going to Sirius because they are lords of compassion. Probably a master of the wisdom, such as the Tibetan or Master Kutumi, would not need the Syrian path, although that is simply speculation. They have so much monastic ability, and the travel to Sirius is for the purpose of enhancing the higher manas. So a different path would be chosen by those who are, strictly speaking, masters of the wisdom rather than lords of compassion, but the masters of the wisdom have the compassion, and the lords of compassion also have the knowledge and the wisdom in sufficient measure. Okay. Now I think we just go on. The occult and mystic forms clairvoyantly seen. So he's going to tell us what it all looks like. But until we can see for ourselves, then we cannot fully appreciate what is being said. The mystic who is meditating has built before him and around him an outline nebulous, inchoate, and cloudy, and in such a way that he himself forms the center of the form. Now that's That's a very interesting type of form, and I'm sure that we recognize the planet to which this type of form is related. So this type form is related to Neptune. Frequently, according to the trend of his mind, the nucleus of the form may be some favorite symbol, such as a cross, an altar, or even his pictured idea of one of the great ones. Very interesting. Okay. Right. So, what's found at the center? It may be himself in a Neptunian sense, or it can be one of these kinds of symbols and others, you know, the five-pointed star and the six or seven-pointed stars, the Tau, perhaps, the different kinds of crosses, or the image, as the mystic imagines it to be, of one of the masters. So often they are again drawn in a very colorful and rather childish manner, but okay, it serves for the people imagining the Great One. This form will be wreathed in the mists of devotion and will pulsate with floods of color, bespeaking as aspiration, love, and ardent longing. I think, you know, we're probably forming in our imagination while he is describing what the image would, how the image would appear, what it would look like. Okay, wreathed in mists of devotion. You know, the mist, the mystic, that's part of it. The mystic is subject to mists and will pulsate with floods of color, bespeaking aspiration, love, and ardent longing. The colors built in will be of singular purity and clarity and will mount up until they reach a great height. According to the capacity of the man to aspire and to love, will be the density and the beauty of the ascending clouds. So obviously, DK can view these things probably on some level of the astral plane. According to his stability of temperament, will be the accuracy of the inner symbol or picture around which the clouds of color circulate, rather than God being a point everywhere found, we have a specific location. And around that location, the angels circle and sing. You know, that is one of the popular views, a kind of a medieval view with the God at the very top of the structure and the cherubim and seraphim circling around the throne of God. And singing, you know, holy, holy, holy. All right, so these are, it's a good idea, some clear image of the form of the mystic, even though in that form there is much nebulosity. It's as if the mystic does not care so much about lines of demarcation, sharp boundaries, and the like. Now, what about the forms built by the man of an occult trend of thought, and who is more dominated by mind, will be of a geometrical type. The grand geometrician is on the second ray, interestingly, and the seventh ray has much to do with a very sharp geometrical representation of reality. Something about the second ray, though, takes in both the mystic and the occultist. Okay. A geometrical type of form. The outlines will be clear and will be apt to be rigid rather than nebulous and flexible. The form will be more painstakingly built, and the man during meditation will proceed with greater care and accuracy, and we might say note some of the Tibetan art and its detailed precision. He will, if I may so express it, take a pride in the manipulation of the material that goes to the building of the form. Matter of the mental plane will be more apparent, and though certain clouds of emotional matter may be added to the whole, matter of the emotional plane will be of secondary importance. Right. So precision, clarity, sharpness of outline, many fewer of these wisps of emotional matter surrounding the whole. And the it's interesting that he talks about the pride of assembly. Okay. So that's what I will emphasize here. Okay. And I'm going to call it just that. Pride of assembly. Maybe the mystic's form is more spontaneous and is arrived at sooner and with less painstaking labor to put just the right form in the right place. The colors employed may be of equal clarity to assuming to the form of the mystic, but they are apportioned with specific intent, and the form stands out clearly and is not lost in the upward surge of emotional colors as the mystic form is apt to be. And that upward surge, we find that is again Neptune, really the planet of the mystics. And what does he say for the last thousand years, a particular type of intense mystic has been produced under the influence of Neptune. So colors apportioned with specific intent, and they're not lost in the upward surge, the upward aspirational surge, which is visible as part of the form that the mystic uses. Later, when the man in either case has reached a point of more rounded out development and is both an occultist and a mystic, the forms built will combine both qualifications and be things of rare beauty. So we have again the coming together of two trends, and we might say that there is some parallel here. The coming together of the human and Deva kingdoms. Perhaps the Deva as the relationship between being more associated with the mystic and the occultist with the man, but no hard and fast rule, I think, can be drawn here, because devas do have a lot to do with the building of the form, and human beings progress through the destruction of the form. And the mystic on the sixth ray is called the hater of forms. So we cannot generalize with specificity about that analogy. Now he says, this will suffice for today. Well, indeed, there's plenty to think about. This will suffice for today, but I would like to outline for you the ideas that must be brought out later. We will deal with the use of form in achieving specific results, and though it is not my intention to give or outline such forms, I wish to group them for you so that later, when the teacher, whoever that is, maybe it's the great teacher, the Christ, moves among men, he may find ready apprehension among students everywhere. So he's not going to specifically offer us the forms, but maybe we can intuit something about what they might be. Okay, this will suffice for today, and we will deal with the use of forms in achieving specific results. They will be grouped. Okay, so let's take a look at what these forms might be. And we want to be ready when the teacher again moves among us. It was so long ago, wasn't it, when the hierarchy was actually working. I've registered the tendency of some students contacting a relatively advanced teacher to imagine that that teacher is a master. Well, the teacher has a certain degree of mastership over things the student has not mastered, but we're told that the masters are not yet walking openly among us. It is the product of what we might call overestimation. Okay, so we have forms used to work on the three bodies, and these will be specific for the upgrading and sensitizing of the three bodies of the microcosm. We have forms on certain rays, and I imagine that they bring in the expression of a particular ray in an effective way. Forms used in healing, that's pretty straightforward, and probably healing in different modes. You know, we're told of three major types of diseases connected with the first, second, and third ray. And elaboration is also offered on other ray diseases. But the cancer of the first ray and the heart issues of the second ray, and more the issues having to do with the nervous system and with the breathing apparatus connected with the third ray, forms used in healing. We can go into esoteric healing book and see the way that the old commentary offers us some methods to be used on the different rays. The mantric forms, which would have very wide applicability. This is fascinating, you know, the variety of what could be used and will be used when the teacher can supervise. Forms used in one of the three departments. The Manus department, I imagine, bringing about great political and earth changes. The department of the world teacher, or Christ, or the Christ, and to be used in various methods of spiritual approach to higher and higher points of tension and sensitivity. The department of the Lord of Civilization, it must be very diverse, coming in under rays 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Forms for calling elementals. Apparently that got out of control in the Atlantean period. And forms for contacting the devas, even though we're told that there are three kinds of devas, one of which will obey man, but the other of which must be asked to cooperate, and cooperate, and yet another and higher type to be obeyed. And special forms connected with fire, or what kind of fire, you know, invoking maybe one of the three fires as needed. So, quite a variety of forms in meditation which can have these useful purposes. And really, we don't know any of them, or if perchance we know some of them, maybe we don't know exactly how they should be used. Obviously, a great form is the Om Mani Padme Hum, but do we know how it is to be used in relation to the jewel in the lotus, or the jewel in any of the chakras? So there's much to be learned here, and it comes, it will come in the future when humanity has demonstrated a necessary degree of selflessness. And I'll just say here that a necessary degree of selflessness must be demonstrated before the forms can be released for human use. Okay. No doubt this tends to pique one's curiosity. Forms on certain rays, well, there are symbols for the rays, which are oftentimes accepted as valid. I think Jeffrey Hodson has a book in which he offers seven different symbols for the rays, and maybe they can be brought in when thinking of what forms we might meditate upon to invoke and evoke certain rays. But there are many specifics here which we will have to rely upon the teacher to reveal. Okay. Now, obviously something has been dealt with before, because there is an ellipsis, and maybe the Tibetan has offered something that he does not want to offer publicly, per se. Whenever these three dots appear, something is being said which is not released to the general public. He seems to be starting on a somewhat different subject, but we're still dealing, in a way, with occult and mystic forms clairvoyantly seen. At least we have not knowingly changed the subject. The periods of physical weakness are of value only for the reason that they demonstrate the absolute necessity there is for the worker to build a strong body before he can accomplish much, and the importance of good health before the disciple can go forward on the path. Well, we're told that usually from the time the third initiation is taken, that the disciple initiate is no longer subject to ill health, at least the usual kinds of ill health. We cannot permit those we teach to do certain things, nor inform them along certain lines, unless their physical vehicles are in good shape, and unless the handicap of ill health and disease is practically negligible, and the karma of accidental trouble almost completely obviated in the personal life. All right, this is a rather strong prohibition, and tells us of the limitations of the physical body that does not possess the necessary strength. So that's one other thing that has to be tended to. National or group karma occasionally involves a pupil and upsets somewhat the plans, but this is unavoidable and can seldom be offset. So larger types of karma may sweep the individual into a vulnerable position, which may delay what the masters can give to that particular pupil. But, you know, we're told even in the application to the new esoteric schools, a great deal of karma must have been lived through, at least the kind of karma that would interfere with the studies of such a person. I think that I will stop here for this little program. It's a bit more than an hour. We've finished program 34, and that was from today, the 10th of October. And we've gone up to page 154, and then we will begin with program 35, either later tonight or at some point. And I'll get this out to you as soon as I can. I'd like to be able to have the gumption, you know, just to be able to stay with this kind of commentary, because it is so useful in the attempt to assimilate what must be assimilated before the great conclave and before the giving out of the new teaching. But for the moment, it is what it is, and this will be sent to you shortly. So many blessings to everybody, and study hard and work your way through into deeper understanding. And we'll see you soon.